Well, I had intended pretty early on to include this discovery in the book, but I thought it would be anecdotal. I wanted to write a book about the hidden conversation about race, and I wanted to create a space where people could talk honestly about the subject, and I planned to write a series of essays, and I guess I was thinking, let it begin with me. If I'm asking people to be honest, I will be honest about some of the discoveries I've made in my own life in listening to my own family. But I just couldn't let it go. This story got up on my back, and it just stayed with me, and it became something that I just focused on, and at some point it became almost like a grand obsession. And I realized at that point, when I was supposed to be doing something, I would be researching, what happened in 1946, or I would be trying to learn as much as I could about, travels throughout small Midwestern towns in the 1950s, to find out more about my grandmother's life and what I discovered about her. And at some point, I realized I'm writing the wrong book. I really just need to dive headlong into my family story. And at that point, that's when I changed course and wound up writing this accidental memoir.
What about it, about what happened to your father, you think got to you? Was it the fact that he didn't tell you, or was it sort of the mystery of what happened that night?
Both of those things, and perhaps even more. I was troubled by the idea that there was this man that I thought I knew so well. I lived with him after my parents divorced. I was very, very close to him up until he died in 1988. And I thought I knew all there was to know about him. So I was surprised, of course, that I didn't, when I discovered that he had been shot, he didn't tell me everything. But I was also pained, deeply pained, when I realized how much pain he had been carrying around with him and didn't talk about it and didn't have an outlet to talk about it. Didn't talk to me, didn't talk to his wife about it. My mother never even knew about this. And I was really troubled that there was I just had this image of him lugging something around, and trying to ignore it. And that, as I think about it now, that's still really hard for me to resolve that.
You grew up in Minneapolis, but of course your father was from Birmingham. You spent summers here. But I wonder, though, about your father's relationship with this place, especially after the shooting, if he felt the need just to get away from this place, far away from this place as he possibly could.
Well, at one point, obviously, he did. I mean, shortly after the shooting, and he had a court date not long after that, and then he skedaddled out of Birmingham. He moved to Boston and then later to Chicago, where all of his brothers lived, all six of them for a time, lived in Chicago. But he fled Birmingham, but he still maintained a relationship with the city, even in those years. I have this great treasure trove of photos. Many of them are in the book, where the brothers would take pictures and send them home. And this was a common experience. It was part of the migration story. When people moved north, they would dress up and they would go to these photo studios in Chicago and Detroit and other industrial centers that became magnets for people who moved up from Birmingham. And they would take these. They looked like John Barrymore photos. They would dress up. And then they would send those pictures home to say, look at us, we're doing okay up here. So I know that he maintained the connection for a time through those pictures, because I now have them in my possession. But then as he got older, he started to spend more time in Birmingham. And one of the great curiosities of his life is that of all the brothers, he seemed to spend more time in Birmingham than most. He went back to Birmingham repeatedly. He sent me and my sisters down to Birmingham. I spent a lot of time in Birmingham on Avenue G when I was a kid. And given his experiences, you would think that he would be the brother that would spend the least amount of time there. And instead, he was the one who always hovered over his parents.
When you came down here to talk to people specifically about race relations in Birmingham in the 40s and 50s, but also the police department, which was under the auspice of Bull Connor under this time, how difficult was it for you to get people to talk about that subject?
Well, I really wanted to find the officers that were involved in this or their children, because I wanted to know what they told their children. I was fortunate enough to find an officer who served in the department in that period and wound up having a wonderful series of conversations with him about life on the other side of the color line. And one of the things that I discovered is, despite that line that was so high and so thick and so divisive, that the officers' lives in many ways were not that different from the people that I knew in Ensley. And if they could see past that color line, maybe they would have seen that. That's something that we understand looking back in retrospect. It's difficult for them to talk about this period also because it's easier to look back if you've overcome something. But if you were among the cohort of people who enjoyed or enforced segregation, it's a lot harder to merge into that conversation. And I wanted to make sure that they were a part of this project because I feel strongly that if we're going to have this honest conversation about race, everybody needs a seat at that table.
You know, as a journalist, you've covered things where you've had to investigate, you've had to probe, but what was it like to have to do that with regards to a member of your own family?
Well, I didn't completely take off my journalism hat. I mean, I obviously don't. I tell other people's stories, so this was unusual and a bit strange to actually be delving into my own background and starting sentences with the word I and putting myself in the story because I couldn't just be an observer in this case. I had to get down into this story. I had to really swim inside the story to truly understand it. But I kept my journalism hat on in that this was very much an investigative project, so I kind of adjusted my hat, I guess. But it was hard. It was very, very difficult. And being a journalist made it a little bit easier for me because I knew where to look. But it also helped me. I had the drill down. So if I had to go to a protective space, I knew how to at least mentally take a step back and just look at the facts and try to assess the facts, put together the pieces, try to find out as much as I could about the year 1946 and what was going on in Birmingham, Alabama. But at the same time, I had to get inside those facts and then try to figure out what would this mean for my loved ones who were living in the city. So it's, you know, nothing about this book was easy. It was difficult in the researching. It was difficult in the writing. It's not entirely easy to sit here and talk to you about this. It's not entirely easy for my family now that we've made this public. But we decided to do it because we thought that in this story about someone who had gone through great pain early in his life but decided instead to focus not on his anger about that incident but on his optimism to try to show America what he could be and show America what it could be, that there were lessons to be drawn from that. And that's why, despite the difficulty, we press on with this because we think it's worth it.